right, it's Bill Bennett. It's Morning in America. It's Monday, June 22nd. Iran, that's the focus. Michael Rubin, resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute and Morning in America. We like to think of him as a resident scholar here. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning.
I made the argument yesterday on CNN that I thought it was an embarrassment that the president couldn't condemn in strong language what's going on in Iran. A lot of blowback on that from Democrats, liberals, but also some from Republicans, that he's threading the needle, he's doing it right. What do you think?
I think it's possible to condemn, and I also believe it's possible to thread the needle and do a lot more than what he's doing now. The president of the United States should always be able to stand up and speak about principles, about liberty, about freedom, about the fact that in Iraq people have gotten to choose their government, in Afghanistan and Lebanon as well. There are ways to talk about general principles without being seen as just supporting Mousavi.
One of my arguments is that, I guess I'll give you my arguments, so I'll give you the other ones and see what you say, is we're being accused of meddling anyway, so we might as well earn it. You know, if we're going to be accused of meddling, we may as well try to be constructive or at least get our language right.
I tend to agree with that. We are darned if we do, darned if we don't in Iran. The Iranian, their chief defense, their chief psychological operation on this is to create straw man arguments anyway. What's lacking is our voice, and we most certainly are being condemned. And true to Iranian culture, the British are being condemned even more, because in Iranian culture, the Americans are basically just pawns of the British. It's almost like some grand Lyndon LaRouche conspiracy.
It seems to me, I don't do a lot of left bashing here, you know, there are enough people to do that, but this seemed to me the left and liberals were much tougher in their language on someone like Musharraf, you know, than they are on someone like the Supreme Leader and Ahmadinejad.
Well, that's certainly true, and the other thing which is frustrating is what we hear, not only from the experience with the Soviet Union and the Cold War, but also in Egypt, in Lebanon, in Iran, are people coming out and asking us to be much more vocal. Part of the problem in the progressive wing is that they have conflated the reformist movement and those seeking much more broadly who are in the streets now, who are advocating for democracy, for much greater freedoms. When we talk about reformists, reformists really are part and parcel of the Islamic Republic. They subscribe to the idea of theocracy. The question right now inside Iran is whether all these street protests are just for Mousavi or whether he was the launching point, as I suspect, and that the street protests right now are much broader. And
it's
indeed,
larger. It's larger.
Exactly. Huh? Yeah. And when we look at the Supreme Leader's statements on Friday, when he was warning of a Velvet Revolution, he was warning, and not only was he warning of a Velvet Revolution, he was also talking about, remember that Mousavi is part of this regime. He was basically warning that these protests are getting much broader. We really need to support that phenomena and give the Iranian people as much say, because what most Americans forget amidst many of the pictures of the hostage taking in 1979 on up are the Iranian people tend to be much more moderate than their government. And indeed, in the future, the Iranians could be a force for stability in the region as much as they're a force for instability now, because they have been immunized against this virus of religious populism.
Right. What is I should start with the facts on the ground. What is going on now today or your most recent update?
From what I gather, and the folks at Radio Farda who have people on the ground in Iran have been doing a stellar job. That's Radio Free Europe's Persian service.
Okay.
We've had a series of protests over the weekend. There has been some calm recently, but the crackdown is occurring amidst the calm. There have been reports both in Tehran and in many other cities. At Isfahan, I was talking to a friend in Iran. I guess it's its third or fourth largest city now. People have been disappearing from the dormitories. What it seems has happened is, one, the Iranian regime has been taking photographs of people at the demonstrations, and two, it seems to have been monitoring a lot of the internet communications and is now starting to roll people up. The Chinese, especially after the 1999 student uprising, which started almost 10 years ago, I think it's 10 years ago on July 9th, the Iranian government had borrowed Chinese security consultants And what the Iranian government's strategy is not to create these sparks that could create more protests, not to simply bash heads in the streets anymore, but to slowly remove the agitators, the freedom, those advocating freedom and so forth, when they're alone, when they're at home, when they're not surrounded by a mob of people. And I think what we're going to have is really a slow-motion purge at this point, which is why it's so important for President Obama to speak up and to keep the attention on.
I think you meant 20 years ago, didn't you?
No. The student uprising was in July, I believe it was July 9th, 1999. I was in Tehran at the time.
Oh, in Iran.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were talking about China. Okay, sorry.
Well, actually, China does bring up one very good point.
Yes,
When it comes to the issue of what happened in Tiananmen Square, no matter how much the CIA would spend, it could spend billions of dollars, it wouldn't be able to identify the man on the street who stood in front of the line of tanks. What both U.S. intelligence and U.S. policy should be doing is trying to create a template upon which students or others feel free or feel encouraged to stand in front of the line of tanks, and that's what we need to be doing in Iran. It's kind of ironic that just, I believe it was this past Friday, President Obama cut off a lot of the funding for the democracy, for democracy and civil society in Iran, when two-thirds of that funding had gone to independent media.
Wait a minute, he did? This is news. What did he do? What did he cut off?
What I've been hearing is that President Bush's very controversial Iran democracy funding was cut off this past Friday.
Really?
I'll email you in a break the reference to this.
What ridiculous timing that is. What unfortunate timing that is.
This goes into what we were just discussing about before, where a lot of the liberals say that, well, this just creates an incentive. It creates an argument that the Iranians, that everything is sponsored by the West, which is nonsense. The fact of the matter is, two-thirds of that money went to Persian language broadcasting into Iran, which has shown its importance at a time when the Iranian government has cracked down on both internal and Western media.
Do you have a theory as to why Obama has been soft on this?
I think it goes back to what we were discussing with regard to the Cairo speech. It goes back to this whole idea of moral equivalency, of confusing moral equivalency, assuming that every country is equal, with the idea that with realism, and it's not realism. What realism is to maximize U.S. leverage, to maximize the U.S. position, and nothing would maximize the U.S. position more than the collapse of the Islamic Republic.
All right, but let's go back to what you were just saying a minute ago. The forces of repression now get smarter, and instead of shooting people and clubbing them out there in front of Twitter cameras or whatever, they take pictures and come then in the dead of the night, and all of a sudden your roommate is gone.
Well, there's two strategies. That's one of them. The other strategy is the Iranians do something called medical furlough, where they will take someone to prison. They will sentence him to perhaps 20 years in prison. But after around 5 months or 6 months, they will let him go home for a weekend. And oftentimes, diplomats and human rights experts say, well, this is a sign that the Iranians are much more moderate. But the fact of the matter is, when someone goes into Evin prison in Tehran, it's not the same person that comes out 6 months later. And what this does is actually serve as a tool of intimidation, because on that weekend when all their family and friends can visit them either in the hospital or at a home, they see what has happened to their friend, to their family member, and the message is clear: don't cross the line.
What has happened to them? What do they see?
Well, they see someone who may have lost 30% of their body weight. They may see someone who has oftentimes suffered a stroke or suffered a heart attack in prison, even though they might only be in their 20s or 30s. They may see someone who is mentally not the same person.
I see. They've been tortured.
Certainly they've been tortured.
I see. So that is, once again, that's the state that we cannot condemn. And we cannot condemn them. I guess one of the arguments is, well, they have nuclear weapons, and we have to keep the lines of communication open so we can negotiate.
Right.
And should we?
I don't think at this point it's appropriate. I've drawn analogies to the so-called Chicken Kiev speech.
Right.
When faced with the breakup of the Soviet Union under the administration of George H.W. Bush, the president gave a speech in which he talked about how everything should be done within the framework of the basically, it was read as being against Ukrainian nationalism, Ukrainian aspirations for independence, when the president talked about working within the framework of the Soviet Union. The fact of the matter is, the Soviet framework was an artificial framework which we shouldn't have preserved in reality, and there is absolutely no reason why we should throw a lifeline to a failing regime right now. Why are people protesting? They're protesting for lack of democracy. They're protesting because of disillusionment with President Ahmadinejad. A major source of that disillusionment has been corruption, has been the tanking of the Iranian economy. And so when we're talking about negotiating with nuclear, Iran's nuclear program, one of the things we're talking about, both Condoleezza Rice talked about, and this has remained on the table, has been giving the Iranians economic incentives. Well, why should we do anything which would preserve this regime, which would alleviate the pressure on this regime at this point in time?
Yeah, it's a little, it's more than a little embarrassing. I was thinking of our history yesterday. Seth and I were talking embarrassments like Tiananmen, the Prague Spring, Hungary in 1956. Were we behind? I mean, in this case, Merkel's out in front, way in front, and Gordon Brown and Sarkozy. Were other countries out in front then, ahead of us?
Well, the French most certainly have been out in front with regard to Iran right now. Many of the Europeans, some people have suggested that this is a good cop, bad cop approach. I really don't believe it's seen that way. Frankly, it just seems that the Europeans haven't given up on moral clarity the way President Obama has.
Ooh, that's hard. I mean, that's basically what I'm saying. But, you know, when we have to follow them on moral clarity, we're usually doing the instruction. You know, it was indeed Tocqueville who talked about the moral squint, you know, of Americans. So.
Well, when we look at European policy towards the Middle East, what always gets in the way of European moral clarity is their fear of migration.
Yeah, I got you.
I mean, when it comes to North Africa and Libya and so forth, they're going to strike compromise.
All right. Listen, can you stay with us another segment?
Sure.
Thanks, Michael. We'll take a call or two. We got a couple people waiting. Michael Rubin, the resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and a national, indeed an international resource. It's Morning in America. Michael Rubin stays with us, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. We're talking about Iran. Cyrus is in Atlanta. Cyrus, you're Iranian? Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. You're on with Michael Rubin. Please.
Yes. I've been here 30-some years, and I've seen what happened during the revolution back 30-some years ago. My theory is the people in the street, they're not only fighting Khamenei, they're fighting terrorism, Islamic fascism, Hamas, Hezbollah, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, all of that together. And it's a moral obligation to help those guys, because every one of those guys, to me, there's a leader inside of every one of those. Some people say we don't have a leader out there. How can we help those people with material? Not to be known into, you know, with everybody's eyes seeing the material, but how can we, I mean, this is today.
Good question.
We have to help them with intelligence.
Thank you, Cyrus. Hang on. Michael, one of the things Dianne Feinstein said yesterday on TV was, I've been reassured that our government, State Department, CIA, were not, you know, providing anything for these folks. Shouldn't we be providing whatever we could, phone cards and communications equipment and money for strike funds and stuff?
Well, what I'd argue are two things. Number one, what we should be doing is looking at what the weaknesses are in the protests, the vulnerabilities. Number one would be the media access.
Right.
And so it should be the policy of the U.S. government to provide as much independent media access coverage as possible. With regard to strike funds, this is something that the Europeans could be potentially huge in, all the European labor unions and so forth. And remember that Iran has had independent trade unions begin back in December 2005.
Yeah.
So we should be looking at that. The other issue which we should be looking at, and it may be more of an issue for U.S. intelligence, is how to get the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps to switch sides, because ultimately that's what's going to determine whether these protests succeed or fail. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps exists it's on top of the army to preserve the ideology of Khomeini. And until the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps changes sides, it doesn't matter how many people are in the streets. So long as the IRGC, shoots people in the streets, the regime isn't going to topple.
Thank you. Cyrus, any comment on that or anything else you want to say? We thank you for your patience.
Yes, I 100% agree with Mr. Rubin. When revolution against Shah happened, the army joined the crowd, and not all of it, just part by part. We have the co-founder of Revolutionary Guard station in Washington right now, working for some think tank. This is the time that we can, with least cost financially, and I guess as far as human body to Americans, to change this government so we can have peace in Middle East by getting something done to Revolutionary Guard. Maybe get one group or two groups of them. Maybe destroy something by some sort of undercover.
Okay. Agent. Okay.
This
Good.
Is the time to help that situation.
Thank you. Thank you, Cyrus. Last thoughts, Michael. Before you say anything, I want to ask the audience. We're kind of shorthanded today. Lloyd's out. But if people in the audience could call, it still exists, Seth, doesn't it? The National Endowment for Democracy. Call the offices there in Washington. Find out what they're doing. What they're doing vis-a-vis Iran right now. The National Endowment for Democracy should be, I would think, paying attention. Your thoughts, Michael?
Well, the person which Cyrus refers to is Mohsen Sazdegherah, who was one of the founders of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. We actually hosted him back in January at the American Enterprise Institute on an all-day conference looking at Iran 30 years after the Islamic Revolution. And he understands what went wrong. He understands how the revolution twisted on itself, how evil it really began. And it's people like this who could very much work to undo the damage which has been done. But ultimately, we talk, and you can look in the news media, for example, all the commentators that talk about hardliners versus reformers in Iranian politics. The big hole in analysis within all experts within the United States is how political factionalization works within the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Yeah.
Rather than writing these national intelligence estimates and move into policy, for example, saying the Iranians will respond to diplomatic overtures when basically that's a policy call, not an intelligence call, what the CIA and others should be doing is trying to figure out this big black box, how the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps works, and unfortunately that's been a failure of intelligence.
Very quickly, 30 seconds, you track all this international stuff. Is there any bewilderment or puzzlement out there among young people yearning to be free about Barack Obama's hesitation?
Indeed, it seems that the tide is a bit turning in the Middle East. That I know there was some blowback after Joe Biden claimed credit for the March 14th movement's victory in Lebanon.
Right.
And in Iran, I think there's going to be a lot of bitterness. Mehdi Khaliji at the Washington Institute referred to this as, a coup, just like in 1953,
yeah,
where we were supporting the wrong side. We're supporting the Islamic Republic, the unelected government. Obama's silence is a choice, and it's a choice of endorsement for Ahmadinejad.
Thank you very much, Michael. Just splendid. And Cyrus, thank you, too. Boy, our callers are so great. They're up to the level of our guests, and I try to keep up with both. Thank you very much, folks. We'll be back. Byron York, Jonathan Foreman, stay with us. Taylor Swift, it's Morning in America.